Hello and welcome to Lehigh Valley Art Salon and a special edition of The Inside Dish, where we explore the culinary arts in and around the greater Lehigh Valley. I'm Mike Dravenstadt, your host for our gastronomic tour of our region's amazing food scene. And I'm here tonight with Mike McCubbin and Jason Bell, who are winners of our WDIY Homebrew Fest this past summer, as well as Jim and Matt Yergi from Yergi Brewing in Emmaus. Jim was one of our judges and graciously offered to produce the winning beer at his brewery, and Matt oversaw production of the cream ale that is going to be available on Thursday, October 10th at Yergi's in Emmaus. Gentlemen, welcome to WDIY.
Thanks.
All right, we have four people in the studio, which we think might be a record here. So, and we're going to talk about beer for a while, which would be fantastic. Let's start with Mike and Jason. So first off, congratulations on your win. Why'd you decide to enter the WDIY Homebrew Fest, and what's your history with the event?
Thank you, Mike. So we attended first in 2016 to the Homebrew Fest, and we had been brewing for a few years at that point. And after that, after we attended that event, we felt that since we had a couple more brews under our belt, that we would enter a competition.
Another reason that we decided to enter the competition is really get an unbiased opinion of our beer. You know, when we brew our beer and we try it for the first time, we almost want it to be so good that we might overlook some of the flaws in the beer, some of the off flavors, and we might think that it's good. But this was a platform for us to really get a good opinion on if the average beer drinker liked our brews.
And you two have known each other, I heard, since fifth grade. Now, you weren't talking about beer back then, right?
Not so much. Yeah.
Coke, new Coke, right. Classic Coke, right?
Right.
So how'd you land on making a cream ale, and what's your history making that particular beer?
We had seen a lot of IPAs, be proliferated, and we love IPAs, but a lot of our friends and family were not big craft beer drinkers, and so when we would go, we would bring some of our homebrew to gatherings of friends and family, and that was a big hit because it wasn't so hoppy, it was sessionable. We probably brewed
the cream ale maybe 9 or 10 times, slowly changing the recipe at first, doing some final tweaks to the recipe, getting our base recipe, and then going from there and kind of being able to replicate that.
Well, and I've been one of the judges the last couple of years, and I think we have not had an IPA as one of the finalists for that particular reason, where the people that love IPAs, love those hoppy beers, might like those styles a lot. But there are a lot of people out there that it's just too bitter, too strong, and too hop forward.
Right.
So the cream ale was a crowd pleaser, I guess, right. Is a good way to say it. Right?
Exactly.
So, Jim, a question for you. What makes a good beer overall, and specifically a good cream ale, since you were one of the judges?
So cream ales are, as Mike had already said, a really easy-drinking, sessionable ale. They use a fair bit of corn in it, which makes it kind of smooth on the palate.
When you say sessionable?
Sessionable means something that you can drink several of them and not be over the top.
Okay, so you said corn?
Yep, there's corn used in it. This particular recipe also has a little bit of rice. Again, it just kind of adds to the mouthfeel of the beer. cream ales are typically a very light colored beer and also very clear. This particular one, again, has a little bit of vanilla that also kind of adds to the smooth, flavor texture of the beer.
And would the corn and rice be in addition to any sort of malt or replacement for them?
No, it's actually replacement for some of it, because they're both contributing to the alcohol. So it's essentially in place of.
Got it. So Mike and Jason, based on what Jim said in terms of what makes a good beer and a good cream ale, how close do you think you got to that representation?
We think it got pretty close. Due to time constraints, we put our beer together before the competition, maybe in less than 3 weeks. We know that Yorgi Brewing, they did a little bit faster because they have the capabilities. They have other techniques that we can't do. But if we would have given it maybe another month in a keg in cold condition, we could have got pretty close to what theirs is right now.
When all things were said and done, we were okay with it being a little hazier than normal because we felt like that might add to the experience of the drinker to say, oh, it's a maybe this is a little quote-unquote creamier, than especially with the vanilla.
Hey, just like with food, you first taste it with your eyes, right?
Yeah.
And up until maybe 4 or 5 years ago with this whole hazy IPA thing, you didn't see a whole lot of haze in beer. So what might have been viewed years ago as something that wasn't desirable was maybe okay, right?
Sure. Thankfully, Jim gave us a pass on that.
And interestingly, when they brought us some to try at the brewery, it had cleared up quite a bit and was nice and crystal clear.
And how many times had you tried brewing that beer before you brought it to the homebrew?
Nine or ten times. Okay. Yep, 9 or 10 times.
And talk about how you refined it over time. What was that first one like, and how did you get closer to the end product?
We ended up simplifying it a little bit more. We had more, I would say, kind of random base grain in there that we needed. We simplified it to just the basically three different crops: barley, corn, and rice. Easily replicatable, over maybe 3 or 4 times we got down to our final recipe. And then it wasn't until more recently where we started adding the vanilla and having that add to the mouthfeel and to the overall experience of the beer. As a base beer, you know, you can take it and maybe add lactose, kind of twist it a little bit and kind of make a more interesting, different type of beer that maybe doesn't fit any one particular style, but the base being a cream ale.
So, Matt, it was up to you to take what the winners had produced and provided to us at the Homebrew Festival and to take their recipe and their production methods and scale them up for your equipment. And talk a little bit about how you approach that. I imagine it's not as easy as taking a cookie recipe and just doubling the the recipe, right?
It's not that simple, but luckily this beer is relatively low in the hop characteristics, and that can be one of the more difficult things to translate and scale up. Grain bill is going to be... it's going to change a little bit based on the efficiency of the brew system, but the ratios are going to stay relatively the same as you scale it up. So that was relatively straightforward. One of the more difficult things we had to deal with in this is the water profile and the water chemistry. The homebrewers were able to use reverse osmosis water and add in the minerals that they wanted to get the flavor profile that they were looking for. Unfortunately, we're not able to do that at Yorgi Brewing for a variety of reasons. And we actually have relatively hard water in Emmaus, and so dealing with getting the water profile to suit the style of beer, and also with it being as light as it is, with the adjuncts of a corn and rice, there's not as much caramel malts and highly kiln malts, which will actually help in terms of mash pH. And so getting the water chemistry to suit the style of beer, to match what the homebrewers had done, and also keep the beer and the pH and the mash to be on target for what we want for optimal beer development. It was a little bit tricky, but we were able to make it work. We had to tweak things a little bit, but it all worked out.
That was quite a chemistry lesson.
Sorry.
I think in a real positive way. I think it gives people, you know, we all like to go to brew pubs and try different things, but to realize, hey, this might not be as simple. There's a lot of complexity, whether it's homebrewing or whether it's trying to scale up. And when people come in, hopefully on Thursday, October 10th, to try this cream ale, they can have a better appreciation of everything that goes into it. Mike and Jason, what equipment did you use to homebrew this?
So we brew on a max 10-gallon batch system, electric brewing with a 5,500-watt element. So when we do our 10-gallon batches, we use a traditional mash tun cooler and batch sparge with that. Meanwhile, when we do our 5-gallon batches for time purposes, we do a brew-in-a-bag method where we can basically recirculate the wort through our mash just using a single kettle. And we can get very stable and consistent mash temperatures. And we get a brew done in basically about 3 hours with cleanup. So, you know, it's really just time efficient, especially for a simple brew like this where it doesn't get too complex with any kind of whirlpool hops or any other advanced techniques, step mashing. So we keep it simple, and we can get this beer done pretty quickly.
It's much easier to squeeze the bag also at a 5-gallon batch. And we put our system together. Jason actually custom built what we use right now, and that was after many years of trial and error and jury rigging. And so gotta give props to Jason on that one.
And shout out to Bobby at Brew Hardware for all the equipment over the years and the coaching. So he was a big part of that too.
And Matt, how does that compare to the equipment that you brewed this production batch on?
I mean, we're at Yergi Brewing, we're only a 2.5 barrel system, so it's relatively small for the commercial size, which allows us to do a lot of things similar to the homebrew scale that might not be feasible in a larger production facility. We're using a steam jacket for all of our heat, which is different from the electrical system that they were doing. But otherwise, a lot of the process is the same. And we've got pumps and things like that that might be a little bit different. But brewing, the science of it and the actual process of brewing itself is fairly similar as you scale up.
So, Mike and Jason, how'd you get into home brewing to begin with? We know you've known each other for a while. You both went to high school in this area. Kind of when did the brewing start?
It didn't really start until we both had our full-time jobs and we're kind of branching out in our hobbies. We're always going to breweries, taking the tour, asking the brewmasters a bunch of questions, annoying the heck out of them, and then taking notes and bringing that back home. And we would start doing beer swaps and trying to get a bunch of people involved and that kind of branch out our palate. And then that eventually turned into us saying, like, the craft beer scene, that there's more and more types of beers that we're able to get. What's preventing us from being able to produce something like that? Seems feasible. So that's when we started looking into, okay, how do we actually go about doing this? And thankfully, we had a buddy, Mahmoud, who had done a bunch of extract kits. And so he came and oversaw our first couple of batches, ask him a bunch of questions, get kind of the common issues solved in those couple. I mean, just making stuff on the stovetop is where we started out.
And Jim, how does that relate to your story? Because I know you started homebrewing too.
That's pretty much the same. You know, the best way to learn is to have somebody who's done it a bunch of times show you. And, you know, I've helped some other friends do that. Certainly my sons. I had actually been homebrewing for a number of years, stopped because there were lots of great craft beers, and I'd kind of, you know, was busy with everything else, and my sons got me involved in it again as they got almost old enough to be allowed to have the products of what we brewed. And we actually have a great tradition around brewing together as a family, so that's kind of where it all started. And like I said, I've had friends who, again, they wanted to learn, so I'll say, hey, come over and watch me brew one time. Then we'll go over to your place. We'll get all the equipment, go over to your place, help you get set up, and I'll brew with you once. And usually people are able to go from there and start doing it. And it's not hard. It's a lot of fun.
I guess having that maybe mentor is a strong word, but someone there to kind of lead you through the process maybe takes a little bit of the mystery away.
Absolutely.
And doing it that first time, and when you take away some of that mystery, you think, I can do this myself.
Right. And as Mike said, there's things that just come up as you're doing it, even when you've done it a number of times that you don't think about. And when somebody else is doing it, why do you do that? And you explain it, they understand why certain things are cleaned and so forth and so on. Just to, you know, kind of make sure you don't make some of the common mistakes that people do the first time.
Well, great. We're going to take a short break and be right back with Mike and Jason, our WDIY Homebrew Festival winners, and Jim and Matt Yergi from Yergi Brewing, and talk more about homebrewing and craft beer. I'm Mike Drabenstadt on Lehigh Valley Art Salon.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
Okay, and we're back with Lehigh Valley Art Salon and a special edition of the Inside Dish. I'm Mike Drabenstadt, and we're going to continue our gastronomic tour of our region's amazing food scene. We're here with Mike McCubbin and Jason Bell, winners of the WDIY Homebrew Fest, and also Jim and Matt Yerge from Yerge Brewing, which will have the winning cream ale on tap starting Thursday, October 10th at the brewery in Emmaus. So I'm excited to see that. And I know Matt and Mike and Jason, you're bringing a bunch of people on Friday, so come early and get a good seat, right? We were talking before the break about homebrewing. What suggestions, I guess, Jim, we'll start with you, do you have for listeners who are thinking of getting into homebrewing? What's a good way to start?
A couple suggestions. I mean, the first one, obviously, is find a friend who does and just go homebrew with them. It's always a relaxed, fun experience. The other thing, consider joining your local homebrew club. I mean, the Lehigh Valley Homebrewers are a great bunch of folks, always willing to talk to you about, you know, different styles, how your beer is, and it's just a, you know, those are probably the top two things I would say to kind of get you going.
Well, you mentioned the Lehigh Valley Homebrewers. What role do homebrewers play in developing a really vibrant local beer scene? Because I imagine that most of the people who scale up and get into it commercially started as homebrewers.
Certainly a lot of them have. I mean, there's people that'll come from larger breweries and, you know, have various jobs there who will then spin off and do their own. But Lehigh Valley actually has quite a number of breweries and distilleries, actually, that have come out of the Lehigh Valley Homebrewers Club. They actually started summer a year ago. They used to have all their meetings at the Steel Garden underneath Bethlehem Brew Works. They started every other month going out to some of the local venues just because of that, to recognize all the different breweries that have homebrew roots in the valley.
And Mike and Jason, are you involved with the group or have had interaction with them, but you've learned from other people?
We've had interaction with them through the Homebrew Fest, and obviously they're a great group of people, fun to ask about recipes, about techniques, and learn more from them and have a good conversation.
And did you two just learn from each other or the other people that you learned from as well?
We had one buddy who got us started. He was our overseer during the whole, you know, first couple brews, and really he kind of just jump-started the whole hobby, and then we kind of went from there. You know, went from in the kitchen to out in the garage with propane, switching up to 10-gallon Bruna bags, where we're struggling squeezing this, you know, hanging 50-pound bag, trying to get the wort out of it and making a mess, and kind of getting streamlining some of the processes with pumps and all the right pieces, and have a pretty laid back brew days.
Yeah, we also had. We had some great encouragement from a brewery in Neptune, New Jersey called Little Dog. Their brewmaster there, Gretchen, gave us like really good encouraging tips and was really helpful when we were first starting out, that kind of gave us the push into continuing, because we were, you know, obviously when you're starting out, you're kind of nervous. There's a lot of unknowns, and she really helped encourage us to take our time, no need to rush. You know, that was really helpful too. That
relax,
push.
Have a homebrew.
Exactly. Exactly.
I'm sure there have been some mistakes along the way.
Of
and
course,
do you
yeah.
Do you drink the mistakes, or they go down the drain?
It depends on how bad the mistake is, I guess.
Exactly. We've had some bad mistakes, so
would you like to try our baking soda porter?
It reminds me of when we bought our house years ago, the residents left a bottle of wine in the fridge, and they said it may be bad, but it's homemade.
There you go.
Tell you what, let's talk about just craft beer overall. I mean, obviously, you know, the four of you brew, you try different styles, you're really aware of what's going on. You know, we've really, to me, seen a big expansion in the IPA category over the last 10 years, more recently with the maybe 3 or 4 years into New England style IPAs and juicier IPAs. So, Matt, let's start with, what's your read on that? Is that something you see continuing or kind of evolving away, or those around for the long term?
I think as a style, it's going to be there. There's some really great beers out there of the New England IPA style. I don't think it's going away. I don't know if it's going to be at the forefront as much as it is currently. We've been seeing the milkshake IPAs with lactose and fruit additions becoming a popular thing as well. I think they're interesting, but I don't think they're going to stay around in the forefront the way that they are currently. It's one of the nice things about craft beer is that it's people like to explore and experiment and try new things, and I think there's always going to be the next new thing, and trying to figure out what that is never easy.
Jim, what do you think?
I agree with Matt. I mean, I think, you know, one of the things that we find at the brewery is that it's people who are getting into craft beer. I think, as Mike said, a lot of times they're coming from more traditional, you know, big box beer, and it takes them a while to get into some style. Some people actually, you know, get into IPAs right away. Other people, it takes them quite a while, and they like variety in beer. And there's certainly styles. I mean, sours are a little bit more difficult to produce in some cases, but I see a lot of people coming in asking for things like that.
And how about Jason?
Yeah, I think IPAs are here to stay. I know there's a place for pilsners and lagers where, you know, you want to kind of cleanse the palate a little bit, but I think no matter what, people are going to want that hop punch, and I think more and more people are getting into that extra, you know, having a little bit more flavor, and I think that breweries are always going to keep pushing the limit on that.
Now, Mike, do you think there are some styles that are underserved given this focus on IPAs? I mean, sometimes you go to a place, they have 12 tap handles, they have, you know, four double dry hopped or juicy IPAs, and you know, a couple double IPAs or an Imperial, and you're thinking, what else is out there? And there's other stuff out there that maybe is underrepresented.
Yeah, I think well, Jason gave me a nice segue there, because
maybe the cream ale, right?
Well, our vanilla cream ale, of course, available at Jurgi's on Thursday. and kind of in that vein, I mean, basically what Jason was saying was, I don't think, especially here in the Lehigh Valley, that we have the availability of a really high quality pilsner or lager that I think that market is kind of waiting to be served. And that's something that we appreciated about Jim and Matt and this kind of styles of beer that they brew at Jurgi's. And so when we were actually entering the competition this year and we saw they were going to be the first prize, we thought to ourselves, that would be perfect for us. So that's what I would say.
Jim, what's your take on any unrepresented or underrepresented styles that maybe you don't see as much as you can, maybe not at Jurgi Brewing, but other places?
I can just throw out, I mean, some of the less common British styles, like British Milds and, you know, so forth, you know, things like German Alt beers and Bock beers, there tend not to be as many of those kinds of things at small craft breweries. Matt probably has some ideas about things that he thinks are underrepresented as well.
Maybe not specific styles, but I think the craft beer scene has been, with the exploration and experimentation, going to big, bold flavors has been a trend, and I think that's left some of the more subtle styles by the wayside, things like pilsners, kolsches, even darker, more malt-forward lager beers like the Bock and things like that, they're not big and flashy. They don't have a huge punch-to-the-face flavor, but they are great beer styles, and I think those are some of the things that have been kind of left by the wayside a little bit. I mean, there's definitely breweries out there brewing them. I don't want to say that they're not, but they're not as popular, not as common.
Well, I remember maybe when I started going to craft breweries, you know, 15, 17 years ago, almost everyone had a brown ale. And now it's almost rare to see a brown ale. When I see a brown ale, I'm like, I'll definitely take that. To see, it kind of takes you back to where you started with craft beer.
And there are breweries, certainly several of the breweries in the valley make very diverse styles. And, you know, to the brown ale, I know that Two Rivers has a great brown ale. We're actually going to be brewing a brown ale next week. You know, but there are certainly breweries around here that have diverse styles. And I think that's one of the, again, a nice thing about the, you know, the valley as a microcosm, that there is some good stuff out there.
And Jim, I guess a good question for you and Matt, in terms of breweries here in the valley, I know we've got a decent concentration now. There are more on tap in the works. I didn't mean to say on tap or on tap, but I guess I did. Where are we now? What's it going to take to stand out? Are we going to start seeing more specialization, or just kind of more of the same? What's your feeling? What's going to go on?
I'll take a shot at it. I mean, I honestly, I think every brewery in the valley is a little bit different. I mean, we've gone from, you know, two breweries 5 or 6 years ago with just Fegley's, the two sites of Fegley's and Weyerbacher, to I think there's 17 breweries open now. And like you said, another two or three coming. Everyone is unique in some way or another, whether it's the beer styles, the venue, what else is going on there. I think it's a great scene.
Well, I think so too, and certainly it's good to have Jurgi on the scene, and it'll be good on Thursday, October 10th, to try this cream ale over at Jurgi with our home brewers. So, Mike and Jason, congratulations, and thank you for joining us here.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And also, Matt and Jim, thanks again for coming to WDIY.
Thanks for having us on.
I'm Mike Drabenstadt, and this is The Inside Dish on Lehigh Valley Art Salon.